Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Tech Magic. I am your host, Kathy Hackle. You might have listened to my other Adweek podcast, Metaverse Marketing, and I'm thrilled if you're joining us for the first time or if you're coming for Metaverse Marketing to listen to Tech Magic. Adweek and I wanted to revamp the podcast and talk about technology in a broader way and try to make sense of all this technological change that is upon us. This podcast is inspired on Arthur C. Clarke's quote that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So we're hoping to bring some light to everything that's happening in the tech space and make you make sense of some of the things that seem like magic. So for that, I have asked one of my bestest friends in the tech industry, Lee Keebler, to join me as co-host for the first couple of episodes, where we're going to be talking about a lot of different things in the technology space. We're not just going to be talking about gaming. We're going to be talking about AI. We're going to be talking about space. We're going to be talking about frontier materials and even things related to crazy spiders. You'll have to see for that episode coming up. We'll also be doing interviews with experts and talking about whether stories are a signal to just a fad or if they're actually going to be part of our future. So I want to welcome my co-host for Tech Magic for these first couple of episodes, Lee Keebler. Lee, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you? I graduated to bestest friend. That's great.
You're one of the bestest. Some bad grammar there, but it's all good. It's with love. So Lee, you and I have known each other for,
for seven? A very long time.
Yes. A long time, right?
A very long time.
Yeah. We've been in the, virtual reality, augmented reality, spatial computing, whatever we call it now, space, for a very long time. And you've had a really interesting career along the way. So maybe for folks that don't know you, but a lot of people do, can you just tell folks a little bit about who you are and why you're such an awesome person to be a co-host?
Oh, well, thanks. So I'm really just like, I started as a tech enthusiast. I was a musician. I lived in Nashville, had a guitar, was a DJ, was trying to do the starving artist thing. And, but I was also really involved in tech. I grew up surrounded by technology. My dad was a tech ed teacher in the public school system and really kind of was always encouraged to tinker with things and learn about things. I was a very curious kid like that. And so I got into music tech because I was doing the music industry stuff and I got this background in technology and started creating interesting ways that I could control music and instruments and my DJ gear and things like that. And that got the attention of Will.i.am from Black Eyed Peas, and I got to spend a really great couple of years in the early part of my career with him and in learning about the tech industry from a high up entertainment level. And that led to some really great opportunities of building unique technology, immersive technology, a lot of art installations. Went on to then work with Intel, worked with Nike, worked with a bunch of different brands, kind of building these type of things that never had been done before. Got an opportunity to work in 2021 on the Olympics and bringing that into virtual reality and spent a lot of time in virtual reality building things that weren't so exciting, things in like the steel industry, things that were just really necessary tools. And that's actually how I think you and I met in those early days when I was doing what would be considered more pragmatic virtual reality and augmented reality tools. But yeah, that's a little bit about my background. Fun fact, my very first job, 14 years old, was in a magic shop in Maggie Valley, North Carolina. Yes, I was probably not supposed to be working behind a counter at 14, but that's, everyone's got those stories.
Those were different times, Lee. Those were different times.
So it's cool to be on something called Tech Magic. I like the thread that's been woven. And right now I'm in Portland, Oregon, and I work for an awesome company that builds also installations called Invisible Thread. And we're building cool tech magic every day. And so I know you're building this tech magic. We're building this tech magic. So I think this is going to be a fun podcast.
Yeah, I'm excited. And throughout the podcast, people are probably going to figure out that I love magic as well. I cannot do a magic trick for my life, but I am like a little seven-year-old when it comes to magic and all this.
Next time I see you in person, not on, not via podcast, right? Not on this coast-to-coast podcast we're doing. Next time we hang out, I'm teaching you a magic trick.
Oh my goodness. Well, hopefully I'll be able to learn it. I like to watch more so than try to do the trick. But let's get started. So we're going to talk about a couple of the stories that are kind of really, really interesting. People are talking about them. Let's start with one that actually just happened. We're recording on Monday. This episode's dropping on Wednesday, but we got word a couple of hours ago that John Riccitiello, the CEO of Unity, has retired. That's how it was phrased by the company. That comes after a couple rough weeks for Unity after some announcements that made the developer community not very happy. So do you want to share with folks a little bit about what the announcement was that made the developers not happy at all?
Yeah, and let's caveat this really quickly. I mean, it said retired, but it also had the words effective immediately. So read into that what you will. It's been a rough go of it this month with Unity, and I am a beloved Unity fan. And so it was a hard month even for myself as a designer and developer, as we saw new approaches to terms of service roll out that were somewhat questionable. One of those being a retroactive terms of service, which I don't think any of us are familiar if that would even be enforceable. That was a big question. They wanted to go backwards. And if you had already released content on previous versions of Unity, and that was already out, I'm talking, you could have released it last year before any of these changes. They wanted to retroactively adopt new terms of service that had some implications on how things would be billed back to the developer. One of the things that they announced that I found very concerning was the idea of the development team being billed per installation. And granted, there was a large cap here. So let me caveat this of if you made more than $1 million on your video game or whatever the cap was, every time that that game was installed, it would accrue, I think it was like 20 cents or something like that as an installation. The numbers do not matter in this particular case. It is the thought of a bill going back to the developer using the Unity engine that they had no control over. So this wasn't based on sales. This was originally proposed to be based per installation. So This brings in a lot of questions about hardware. If you're using your hardware, you're running out of space and you delete something and then you reinstall it later so you could go back to it as a game or something like that, that would actually be accruing a new bill, even though it wasn't a new sale. And this is something that most game studios or development studios couldn't predict in their own finances. So this becomes very problematic, right?
And also for brands. A lot of people from brands are listening to this. So a lot of the brands, might not have an internal, game development team. Some of them do, but they hire, studios to create these experiences or these builds. So it would have also had an impact, would it be the game studio that gets that charge? Is it the brand?
Technically, it's the game studio that would get that charge because they're sitting on the license of Unity. And so this is really problematic because as a developer, if I'm designing for a brand, which I've done many times in the past, I'm expected to be able to give them a bill that would make sense, right? I've got to be able to write a scope of work and show what things will cost and be relatively accurate, right? Perfectly accurate is the goal. And this just throws a lot of wrenches into those things. Long story short with all of this, this drama bubbles up. All of the major studios start questioning not only the practicality, but the legality of can you retroactively go against terms of services and things like that. And a lot of people decide, you know what, we're going to step away from Unity for a little bit. And some major studios decided this might not be for us because there are alternatives. And basically the without mincing words, their stock plummeted. And it wasn't like a little drop. It was 10, 15 bucks.
Drop.
It went down and it just kind of continued sinking. This shouldn't be considered surprising. The CEO of Unity has had a history of kind of proposing questionable practices of how to profit. They were formerly the CEO of EA, and they've made some statements in the past that would be, it would be considered probably not in the best interest of anybody within the ecosphere. I try to be as unbiased to these situations as I possibly can, because you just never know who you're going to work with or work for in the future. But I'm pretty certain I'll never work for John. So
I guess he's retiring now. So
retiring with air quotes around it. So yeah, that's kind of the story on Unity, and I'm hoping that this breathes some, gives a little bit of a breath to the whole industry, and lets Unity come back, because it is a great engine and it's necessary for our field. Anyone in the tech space is aware of Unity and wants to see them do well. So we're really rooting for a good return here.
Yeah, and just like as way of background, like I've had a chance to engage with John. People call him JR. With JR, we were actually, you know, I was on a panel with him once. We had several conversations. I think he's a, you know, very interesting fella, very smart, you know, has been very successful in business regardless. So it's really interesting to see kind of what happened, the announcement that was made, the, you know, how upset the developers were with, you know, and it totally makes sense for them to be. And then this news coming up. I was reading an article and it kept saying, you know, this has definitely changed the game in some ways, because it made a lot of studios reconsider the game engine, you know, the infrastructure that, you know, that they're using, the technology that they're using to build some of these experiences, and start to look at alternatives. So do you think that these types of situations are, you know, this is just a fad? People got upset about, you know, the new terms of service, or is this kind of the future? Are people going to be looking at more game engines? Are more game engines going to pop up?
Undeniably, it was actually maybe one of the better things that happened to the industry, because it forced people to have the question of what are my alternatives? And I think that that's a good thing to ask, no matter what industry we're talking about. Having alternatives is good. Choice is good. And a lot of open source engines started popping up that may not be right in prime for the next AAA game, or even a virtual reality or augmented reality experience or something like that. But for your standard mobile games, or maybe some independent indie titles that you'd want to put out on PC, a lot of people started discovering that, oh, there was open source solutions here too, which I've always been a big proponent and fan for. I think that it's great to start calling into question early the concept of a terms of service change, especially a retroactive one.
Yeah.
We may have headed off a pretty significant problem, because if this would to have gone forward the way it was originally set up, the precedence that it would set in all of technology for a terms of service was mildly terrifying, to say the least. Idea that a company could go back on their word and say, just kidding, now here's your new agreement, even though you've not done anything. I don't think anyone would logically want that.
Well, yeah, I don't think anyone would. And I remember some of the conversations around the brand space. Like, a lot of people weren't necessarily talking about it because they might not be in the gaming side of things. But I did, you know, see some brand people being like, well, what does this mean? Like, how does this impact, you know, what we're building, or what we might be building? So,
I want to caveat that conversation. What really is interesting here is this is all about revenue share. The engines that you build your solutions in, right? Even if it's in fashion or branding, whatever you're building that in that engine. If it's like in Unreal, there's revenue share there. Or now Unity is also proposing the same to a certain market cap, that a revenue share would be done. I find this very strange, to be completely honest, because I can't think of another industry that actually says, yeah, okay, I'm going to do that. So I come from the music industry. I can't fathom a world where Pro Tools or Ableton or Logic Pro, which are softwares that you make music in, would ever have ownership of the music, like a revenue share with of the music you produce within it. So imagine
That's like Adobe owning, right? You know, rev share for your images or something.
Could you imagine if Pro Tools got a revenue share from Taylor Swift?
Oh my goodness! Wow,
bananas.
Yeah.
So it's a weird precedent that we've already set in the gaming industry as it is in the technology industry that I don't really like, because it calls into question of why.
but some of these engines you can use for free, right? Like if you're using a free tier.
And that's the whole give and take of it is you use it for free until it starts making money. And I can totally get behind that. But I also think that there should be always be an option to just buy the license and then whatever I make from your tool, I get to keep, right? That should be an option. I'd like to see that more and more available. And maybe the industry has to move in that direction one day if more open source tools become more readily available. We know that open source tools have really kind of made Adobe make really consumer-friendly decisions in their product line because alternatives popped up. Alternatives are good.
Yeah. You mentioned Unreal. So Unreal is one of the other game engines, right, that people are using to create these experiences. We're going to be talking about one of those experiences. But Unreal has also had, you know, a rough couple of weeks. They've been in the news as well with layoffs. And, you know, I know several people that have been impacted. Can you tell folks a little bit more about Unreal and maybe what's happening there? And we can definitely talk about Unreal Fest, which was their big developers conference as well.
Yeah, Unreal is very similar. I mean, they're often said in the same breath with Unity, right? It's kind of the Apple versus PC arguments of a couple of years ago, right? We've got these two behemoth engines and they both have approached business a little bit differently. But at the end of the day, they generally do the exact same thing. They just do things a little differently. I've used both. I'm a fan of both. Again, you know, this goes back to it's great to have choice. And I don't know if I look at the hardships that Unreal's gone through this week and think too much into it. I think they're still on very solid footing. The industry in a whole, technology as in a whole, has had a rough couple of months. I mean, heck, maybe they've had a rough year. And this is just the reality of the ebbs and flows of technology as
it's been a rough couple of years, though.
There we go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As the economy changes and the world's had a rough couple of years, right?
In general, yeah. I think we're still going through it. I mean, I feel like every other week it's a new layoff in a new tech company or, you know, whether it's, you know, Unreal or MediaMonks or, you know, whoever it is that is in the space, whether it's, you know, a tech company or an agency or a consulting a company. Like I feel like there's layoffs all the time and it's heartbreaking.
It's a shuffling of people at the end of the day, right? And people bounce back. It's not that it's not difficult or hard. You don't want to see it happen, but we had a massive hiring increase during COVID when people weren't really sure what was happening. And now things are going back to normal and normal mean sometimes in some instances mean a lower number. And you just kind of hope that the companies that have to make those tough decisions take them very seriously and do the best that they can with exit packages and severance and things like that.
That's definitely something Unreal did. I mean, as far as I understand, they gave everyone 6 months severance and they were going to cover health for the next 6 months. So I think that was, very good as compared to other layoffs. So yeah, that's positive. I mean, my heart does go out to all these people, right? One of our future guests that we're going to have in an interview is David Armano. And one of the conversations that we're going to have is around, you know, when we tie our identity to the company we work with and, you know, you get laid off, what do you do in that case? So I feel like a lot of people that are listening to this might definitely identify themselves in this moment.
I think that's one of the harder things, and Kathy, you and I have both been through this, right? We work at some place that you love so much, and you find part of your identity within those four walls. And I don't know. I've learned in my years that it is great to be a banner carrier and really believe in the place that you're working, but sometimes those places do have to make difficult decisions. Your identity should be in you and in your talents and in your family and in your loved ones and the ones around you and the things that you find in your hobbies. But where you work should just be, that's where you work. And the work you do is who you are. I don't disagree with that. But it's a lesson I think we all learn in time.
Yeah, but I think we're definitely moving more into that transactional kind of model where it's like I work and this is the work I do, but it doesn't define who I am or it doesn't define, what I stand for. So definitely, I do want to move away from this a little bit and talk a little bit about some of the things that are, you know, being created using Unreal Engine. So during Unreal Fest, which is their big developers conference, they had some, you know, great panels. I had a good friend on the ground, you know, messaged me about a BMW driving experience that was, you know, released last week. But there's other, you know, experiences in Fortnite. And just to explain to folks, Fortnite, if you hear the word Fortnite, you're probably thinking Battle Royale, which is where most people are spending their time. But Fortnite has another part called Fortnite Creative, where you can create maps or islands. Let's call them maps or islands, where people can go and play an experience. So like BMW, for example, has an experience. Nike has a fantastic experience. There's been a lot of brands going into the space, just like they do in other, you know, other platforms like Roblox. They're also going into Fortnite Creative and creating these experiences. They don't need the permission of Fortnite, as you know, or Epic Games to create these maps. They do have to get them approved, but they usually hire, you know, a studio or creators in this case to create these maps. And there's a specific map that launched recently, Lee, that you and I were chatting about and that you feel really strongly about. So maybe let's chat a little bit about that. And I will preface this and say that I did find out about this map in the weirdest of places. And there's a reason why, you'll know soon. While I was pumping gas, filling up my car, I drive a plug-in hybrid, so not fully electric, but I still had to pump some gas. And I was pumping gas and all of a sudden, there was an ad when you're pumping gas here in the U.S., an ad in something called Gas Station TV that plays while you're pumping gas. And I saw an announcement for this experience built in Fortnite. And Lee, tell us a little bit about the experience and how you're feeling about it.
Oh, you told me to be good about this.
I just said the first episode. Try to not to, you know, try to be not too bad. I don't know. I mean, by
what
all
rating
means,
does this podcast have? Cause I got words. This opens so many problems. So Shell released a Fortnite experience. And I think it garnered on its announcement and launch, I think it got about 1 million views or something like that through their streaming announcement. It's not that it's Shell. Okay. I don't have a gripe against Shell. And I don't have a gripe against brands going into these platforms. I really genuinely don't, as someone who has actively built a lot of the worlds that are branded. I think that there's a good opportunity here. But there does come a time where you just kind of wonder, why are we doing this? And what are we trying to what message are we starting to manipulate? And when we start getting into conversations of Shell getting into Fortnite this is their explanation to reach to a younger audience so they can talk about environmental messages. What they did was not necessarily propaganda, but you start tiptoeing closer and closer when you have a business that functions to provide fossil fuels, which are still necessary to the world. But then they're trying to also define an environmental message to a younger audience. You just wonder if that's the right path for that message to be flowing to an unsuspecting child. And this brings to a larger question when it comes to what I call a UGC, user-generated content-based video game. I do think this whole digital world landscape may be saved by the EU at the end of the day, by no thanks to our own doing. But we just need a little bit more conscious effort or regulation in this. And I'm not a big person who believes in regulating the internet. That's not what I'm saying. But much similar to how we, and I've heard it phrased this way, much similar to how we've taken toys out of cereal boxes because it promotes the purchase of sugary, non-nutritional cereal. We probably need to take that consideration when it comes specifically to user-generated content-based video games. Because as you mentioned, Fortnite, yeah. Unreal, they let anyone build in it. That's the magic behind Fortnite. So What does that mean? Where does advertisement come to play when it comes to these worlds? And I think a lot of that can be done with simple age gating, and we're seeing more of that. Roblox has done a fantastic job of implementing a solid age gate system, and I think we'll see that with Unreal and Fortnite as well. It's just one of those things that we have to make conscious decisions about, and be wise with the paths that we have before us. Not saying that anything necessarily went wrong with Shell building a Fortnite game. It just is one of those things when you hear it, you go,
Things that make you go, I don't know. You actually fill up your car in the Shell map. I haven't played it, full transparency. I haven't been to Fortnite to play it. But I did notice that it was built by a lot of creators. Like, there's a lot of these parts of the map that were built by creators. And I wonder, you know, if there's any backlash, you know, against the creators. Like, I hope not.
I don't think we've seen that yet. But, well, now you say I hope not. But these are influencers. You have creators, you have creator influencers, and you have influencers, right? And so we're in this influencer economy. And so influencers run a business. This is obviously tied to their business as influencers. That's why they were selected to do this. There's nothing wrong with any of that. But who they decide to work with does have an impact on who, how they're seen and what their influence is, right? And that at the end of the day is proper capitalism, right? Like, as a business, you make decisions and you just deal with the consequences.
Yeah. So before we go to break, I do want to ask you, do you think this is future or fad? Are we going to see more potential issues rise up with some of the worlds or virtual experiences that might be created? What do you think?
No doubt. this technology is, it's Pandora's box in a good way and in a bad way. But once we crack it open, we better hope that we've got things taken care of, because we kind of didn't do that with the internet. And in many ways, that's
for that, right?
We're still paying for that in many ways. And in many ways, it was best. You know, there's double sides to the coin. So, I can argue and devil's advocate that whole triage, but at the end of the day, with this, this is going to be the conversation you hear over and over again for probably the next couple of years, while the dust settles and we decide what does it mean to have a video game that is multiplayer and always on.
That anyone can create it.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think it's part of that future. It's not just a fad. I think we're going to start to see, you know, as more brands enter the space and more creators do things, we're going to get, definitely more potential issues arise from those worlds. And then you add AI, which is another level. But let's go on break. We're going to be talking about AI. And also we're going to be talking about space, which is really exciting. So let's go to break.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
All right. So getting back to the show, I want to talk about a story that our producer shared with us, and it's about artificial intelligence and Robin Williams. And something that's happening with using someone's name, image, and likeness in AI, and how family members are starting to feel about that. So I'll let you talk about this one, Lee, because I think you probably have more information than I do about this AI story with Robin Williams.
Well, this was really more of a story about Robin Williams' daughter, Zelda. She was confronted with the fact that her father's voice was being used, repurposed as an AI voice for content. And this is not the first time we've seen this. We're starting to see this more and more. Most notably, we saw Tom Hanks have this problem where all of a sudden he saw his image and his voice sponsoring a product that he had not endorsed. Mr. Beast, famous YouTuber, also had this scenario pop up last week, I believe, as well. And we're going to see this more and more. But for Zelda Williams, she had to confront the reality that someone is going to utilize AI to recreate her past father's voice. And that's emotional. That's hard. And she openly said, you know, this is something that I'm not okay with and is kind of a struggle. And I get that. I'm a big fan of voice AI. I think that there's a lot of good that can come from it. But when you start utilizing that tool without the rights, and now we have a question about who owns voice print rights, that brings a whole new can of worms to the conversation. And as you start seeing famous brands, people pass on, you're going to see those voices kind of resurface, and they may not have been okay with the use case put before them. So who owns the rights to do that? Who can say, no, we don't want you to do that? And where does that fall within the rights of intellectual property? Oof. These are going to be tough questions.
Yeah. Is it something that people need to figure out before they pass away? Is it part of estate planning now? Is it something that their estate, whoever, you know, receives that, is going to be in charge of?
Or what happens? Yeah. I mean, even before that, like Tom Hanks just had this problem. Mm-hmm. He's still kicking. So what do you do in that particular case? Because you start getting into questions of impersonation. People impersonate people all the time. James Austin Johnson on SNL does one of the best Trump impersonations. I mean, he does Trump better than Trump does, right? So that's what he's known for. He's an actual intelligent that's mimicking a voice. So what happens when the computer starts doing it? I don't know. There's so many interesting and also horrible questions that come with this. So I feel for the scenario this is caused for Robin Williams' daughter, because it's got to be tough. But at the same time, I was thinking through this as I was reading through articles and taking notes today. It creates a really unique opportunity where this all kind of started resurfacing because they're reusing Robin Williams' voice for a new project with the Aladdin brand. But it made me think of like how many movies can get localization done with the original voice. You know, now who may not know, that language side. Because Robin Williams, to me, as a kid who grew up in the 90s, is Genie from Aladdin. And it would be crazy to listen to that in a different language and it not be Robin Williams' voice. Now, after he's passed, that's a different discussion. That's an interesting problem. I'm not sure, you know, what does it mean when we can recreate a new Prince song and Prince has been gone.
Prince was very visionary. Didn't he have it written in that he couldn't be brought back as a hologram? Did he include anything about his voice?
I'd have to go back and check. We actually have an expert who can answer that question, just not currently on the show. So I will go back and find out.
We should have him on the show because I do feel like Prince was a visionary on gaming, metaverse, like technology. Indeed.
Oh, Prince. Like, yeah. He was on top of it. Yeah. Very, very forward thinking, had early immersive video games. We're talking back in like early 90s. He created some really amazing things. But as for his likeness and his voice as returning as a hologram, maybe that would not surprise me, but I don't have that information off the top of my head.
So I'm going to say this one, sadly, is part of the future, and it's going to be a very wonky, complicated future, not just a fad. This is going to continue, and it's going to get
Going to get so bad before it gets better, because once we get, I'm honestly scared of not this year's political season, but next year's and the year after, as this start, because you can make people say anything you want them to say. And I mean, heck, just to be completely transparent, just doing this podcast is enough data that someone can utilize and recreate my voice. And now they have enough content to make me say anything that they'd like for me to say or for you to say. So there's a risk to just doing this.
Anyone
podcast
out there, please don't. Don't do that, please. So yeah, I'm with you. I feel like it's going to get really complicated, and we're going to see the effects of it in the next couple years and not such, you know, some good things will definitely come, but some others.
Well, let me ask you a question on this.
Yeah.
You're an author. What would it mean to you to utilize AI to do your own audiobook?
That's interesting because doing the audiobook is such a lot. It's so much work and it just takes so much out of you that we just normally go with, you know, a voice actor that does it. I don't know if the books need to be in my voice, to be honest.
Would it be weird for you to listen to an audiobook of your book with your voice and you know you did not read that out loud?
Yes, it'd be super weird. I mean, I'm a guinea pig for all that stuff, so I might do that for the next one. That's a great idea, Lee, but I don't know. That makes me worried as well. It's like, you know, the voice print and everything. I mean, I don't know. That's actually a really good point. I will say this, though. I do prefer hiring a human to record my, you know, my audibles or like and things like that instead of using AI. I've always found the AI versions to be too robotic, but that's obviously evolving and changing. So I don't know. I mean, I'm team human for right now when it comes to recording my books in audio.
That's good. Good. Mm-hmm. Stay team human. We need humans.
All right. So now we're going to go to our last story that we're going to talk about. And this is obviously, you know me and you know I love fashion. That's like my creative playground. I always joke and I say some people paint, some people write music like you. I personally express myself through fashion. It's kind of what I like to do, what I enjoy doing, whether it's creating, you know, capsule collections or, you know, working with designers to create really cool technical ideas. Like, fashion is my playground. So this story I really wanted us to touch on because I'm also really big into space. I've been doing a lot of writing on space marketing, believe it or not, and we'll be talking more about that. But the Italian Maison Prada and Axiom Space are collaborating with NASA to create the spacesuits for its 2025 lunar mission, which will be our return to the moon and will put the first woman that will be on the moon. So really exciting stuff. They're going to be working on pushing and adapting materials, obviously, because it's going to be very different than designing with materials that work on Earth. It's going to be a really interesting process. It says 2025. In the past, NASA has spent millions, large amounts of money trying to create these suits. The goal is for them to be, you know, more stylish, but also be more functional. You know, usually we think of, you know, astronauts in these like really bulky, very uncomfortable types of spacesuits. So I'm really excited about this. I personally think it's part of the future. I think that there's going to be a lot of really interesting things happening in the space side on the commercial front. But what do you think? Like, what from your perspective, what do you think of this? Is this fad or future?
I don't know. I'm not a fashion person at all. As soon as I heard it, I thought it was a marketing gimmick. I'm just, to be real, I thought it was a marketing gimmick. They were going to like slap a patch on and be like, see, Prada. But as I looked into it, that's not the case at all. The whole concept is that Prada would have more experience with composite fabrics and actually be able to tackle this from a technical standpoint in a way that NASA might not be able to start like as a starting block. So as I thought more about that, I was like, no, that makes a lot of sense because Prada would have a longer history of working with standard materials, and then being able to utilize that to encapsulate, NASA's technology for things that are obviously, I would assume, are outside of Prada's scope of work when it comes to like making sure things are airtight, sealed, and being able to have, you know, temperature control and things like that. I'm down to see what it is. I think it'll be cool. I hope they hit a home run for the sake of the astronauts.
For the sake of the astronauts, right? I do love the idea of still going to space and being stylish. Like, why not?
I like who is it? One of the people from NASA actually said that we should not expect to see astronauts in Paisley spacesuits. Or any fancy patterns. It's more about maintaining good thermal environment, which, great. That's fantastic. The other thing that stood out for me is the weight. We're gonna test this to our listeners here. The suit is expected to weigh 55 kilograms. That's from the most recent revealed spacesuit. And I was like, wow, I don't know what my conversion is. That can, and it says 55 kilograms and to be a better fit for female travelers, which I think is fantastic.
Which
that's
is great,
still
yeah.
121 pounds.
Yeah, but it's lighter than other ones. Like that, I don't think that's what
people
realize.
That's what's so crazy is that's an
heavy.
Improvement.
Well, is it zero gravity, right? So does it actually weigh? That's the question. I don't know. Well, is it zero?
That's a good point. If you're doing a spacewalk, what does it? Yeah, it doesn't weigh 121 pounds if you're doing a spacewalk. You're right. That's fantastic. I didn't think
I just don't know the gravitational pull of the moon, though. Like, so, I don't know.
It's not here. So it could be, might be a pound. I don't know. I'd have to do math on that. I'm not going to do math that fast.
Well, all I know is that the people at Prada are going to be working with really interesting materials, pushing the limits of what it can do. And, you know, for the safety of the astronauts, I hope they look stylish, but are also safe. And I think we're going to continue to see this, like, space spilling into a lot of other things. I did an interview, was it 2 years ago, on space marketing and how back in the, early 2000s, Pizza Hut sent a pizza up to space to a cosmonaut in the International Space Station, and they paid $1 million for that. Whereas Estee Lauder sent up some of their serums and had the astronauts do like
a photo
shoot.
But did they do it in 30 minutes or less? Because they get a refund on that $1 million if it takes more than 30 minutes.
Oh, no, 30 days. I don't know how long it took to get that thing up there, but it was there. And I'm sure it wasn't too tasty. But Estee Lauder actually sent up some serums and had the astronauts do a photo shoot. And it was like under $200,000. So it was like the cost of space marketing is going down. And then I had this whole question on like, you know, if the astronauts are the ones in charge of creating the content, like, does this make the astronauts like content creators and creative directors? Like,
oh, totally.
A whole other
totally.
World.
Absolutely.
Influencers in space. I don't know.
I think that's one of the most impressive things for me as I've seen like in space, as the space program has grown and changed over the years, is just how fast the people up there can get content back to us. It's just wonderful. Yeah. When I was a kid, you had like really scratchy microphones, really long delays. If you'd hear anything back, you could hardly understand what they said. And now we're getting like HD feeds. It's like just streaming YouTube up there. It's
well,
crazy.
Yeah, we're doing bell ringings from space, opening the markets. I mean, it's a whole other era. So I would say this one is a mix of future and fad for me. Like, I don't think like all the design, I don't think all the Maisons are going to be designing spacesuits. But I do think that, you know, this part of commercial space is really interesting.
We've got a history of it, right? Jeep designed vehicles for the military. I mean, it's not like we've not had brands do things for the government sectors before in exploratory sectors. Someone's got to build it. And I think that it'll be interesting to see how it comes out.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully it'll look great. And while it will be heavy, it will be less heavy than others. And yeah, I don't think there should be no reason that you can't be stylish while you're up in space. So I think that'll be it for this week, Lee. What do you think? How do you think we did?
I had a blast, but I always enjoy just talking through these things. Hopefully people like listening to them.
Yeah, and definitely if anyone has any comments or wants to reach out to us, please do message us on LinkedIn. We're going to work on getting an email as well for the show, so you can email us your comments. We're hoping to be kind of reading some of those questions or comments that you might send our way, and any stories that you think we should be talking about. So, Lee, thanks for joining me for episode 1 of Tech Magic. It went pretty magical in my perspective, so thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I love doing this. This is great.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us for this first episode. I hope you found something interesting to think about in the conversations we had around AI, space, game engines, and everything in between. And we'll hope you subscribe and you'll join us next week. Thank you, and I hope you enjoyed Tech Magic.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hatch because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.